Thanks so much. I do want to acknowledge my co-author today. She's here with me, Dr. Lane Volpe. And we're writing a paper on the predictors of exclusive breastfeeding among adolescent and adult first-time mothers. We have no relationships to disclose. And our research is funded in part by the NICHD. So to get started, probably most of us in this room may know this, but breastfeeding is deemed the optimal form of infant nutrition and is generally regarded as the biologically appropriate form of nutrition for all infants. And it's protective against many early life health conditions. Increasing breastfeeding rates among all groups of mothers has been a major public health goal in the U.S., especially as of recently. Healthy People 2010 particularly targeted increasing breastfeeding rates, and the main target was to sort of increase early postpartum as well as 6 months and exclusively breastfeeding through 3 months and 6 months. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends exclusive breastfeeding, that is no supplementation with formula milk, et cetera, through 6 months. And Healthy People 2010 wanted to increase that exclusive number at least to 17% by 2010. Currently in the U.S., 75% of women do initiate breastfeeding, but only 43% are breastfeeding at 6 months, and an even smaller percentage, 13.3%, are exclusively breastfeeding at 6 months. So when we're talking about adolescent versus adult breastfeeding, research has shown that adolescents do have the lowest rates of breastfeeding of all age groups, especially mothers younger than age 20. They tend to have lower breastfeeding rates than mothers of any other age group. There are a number of particular barriers to breastfeeding that are unique to adolescents, including things like school context, et cetera. And improving breastfeeding duration and initiation rates among teen mothers is really complicated by the fact that physicians and other health practitioners have the least amount of impact on infant feeding decisions. So a mother's mother, the baby's grandmother, or the baby's father may have a greater influence on infant feeding decisions. One of the things we're particularly interested in is the costs and benefits of breastfeeding to different mother groups. Mothers everywhere have to make strategic decisions about how to balance the needs of their children against their own resources and their capacity to meet those needs. Initiation and or continuation of breastfeeding may represent a conflict between infant needs and maternal capacity, especially given our contemporary culture where there are socio-environmental conditions and personal experiences even that make the costs of breastfeeding prohibitive. One of those personal experiences is childhood trauma. Research has shown this, and we're gonna have a paper on that later today, which is fascinating. So in terms of social support, one of the major challenges to breastfeeding that women face in the early postpartum period is a need for social support. And research has shown that even low-income women who tend to have lower rates of breastfeeding know the benefits of breastfeeding, but they perceive major social impediments like social supports and other obstacles to actually getting that done, to actually breastfeeding. Support resources can lead women to continue breastfeeding. And then research has also shown that health professionals, especially lactation consultants, while they advocate breastfeeding, are very much aware of these social constraints and social impediments and have to sort of troubleshoot this and sort of toggle between those costs and benefits of breastfeeding for mothers. To push that a little bit further, in terms of social context, women tend to see formula feeding as easier. So research has shown that although maybe breastfeeding is seen as the moral method among many groups of women, formula feeding is often seen as less costly. And women are constantly sort of negotiating these pressures. And social scientists have pointed out that it's not adequate for public health messages to tell women to just breastfeed. If women already know the benefits of breastfeeding but are hitting these social constraints, individual realities, lack of supports, etc., then we have to reassess what public health messages are saying in order to get these rates up. So what are our research goals? Well, we use a data set that I'll explain in a minute to explore whether there are differences in exclusive breastfeeding or formula feeding across adolescent and adult first-time mothers. We want to examine whether being an adolescent does indeed increase the odds of exclusively formula feeding, that is, of not breastfeeding, and assess the role of important variables such as social support, such as childhood trauma, sleep locations, and other potentially important variables that we find to impact exclusive feeding. So our data come from the Parenting for the First Time study. This was a multi-site study at four different sites in the United States. It was longitudinal and prospective. It looked at first-time mothers. So these are women with no previous live births. The first assessment was at the prenatal period. So this is key because we were able to establish sort of intentions and anticipation of that pregnancy, of the postpartum experience, rather. And there were follow-ups at 6 months, 12 months, et cetera. We're particularly looking at the six-month follow-up because we're interested in that outcome of feeding at 6 months. The original sample included 682 women, and we divided these women by three groups. Adolescents, or teenagers, ages 15 to 18 at the time of enrollment. And then adults were divided into two groups, low education and high education. The adult low education women ranged from ages 22 to 35 and had no formal education behind high school. What we mean by that is no post-secondary education, so they weren't pursuing an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree. The adult high education group was the same age range, but did have some, at least 2 years of formal education in a post-secondary institution. We oversampled for African American women. 65% of our sample was African American, 19% white, and 14% Latina. So again, we're looking at the six-month assessment. We're looking at only those women who completed the six-month assessment. So we did lose some participants by looking only at this measurement, at this assessment time period. The teens were 283 sample size. The adult low education was 111. The adult high education had 101 of them. The racial and ethnic composition was the same pretty much as the original sample. So our study measures, we looked at a variety of measures. Here are a few, and we're even going to dwindle that down a little bit more and only show the outcomes on a few of them for time purposes. But we looked at a social support index, we looked at trauma index, depression scores, stress indexes, infant sleeping location, anticipated sleep deprivation, I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, WIC support, and as well as feeding intentions. Feeding intentions being at the prenatal assessment, how do you expect that you will feed your baby? And then at 6 months, we could see how they were actually feeding their baby. Our analyses, like I said, included only those who completed the six-month assessment. We looked at bivariate statistics, looking at the relationship between a variety of independent variables and the outcome variable of infant feeding, as well as the relationship between the mom groups and the variables of interest. Our logistic regression outcome variable was exclusive formula feeding or not. So the title of our talk of exclusive breastfeeding is a bit of a misnomer. Although we looked at that, we actually had much higher numbers of women who were exclusively formula feeding at 6 months. So we decided to sort of flip the discussion and examine why aren't women breastfeeding? You know, what is it that's leading these women to exclusively formula feed? So what are our findings? The first is this intention variable. So how are women intending to feed their infants? You can see of those intending to formula feed, which is the right-hand set of columns, most of those were adolescents. the interesting thing is that the difference between these groups is highly significant. More telling, perhaps, is by mom group. The adolescents, among adolescents, more of the young women intended to exclusively formula feed. But if you look at the adult high education group, a huge majority of them intended to exclusively breastfeed. These groups don't add up to 100 because the others were planning to do other, that is a combination of breast and formula milk. So what were they actually doing at 6 months? Of those exclusively breastfeeding, it was mostly the adult high education mothers. Of those exclusively formula feeding, it was mostly the adolescents. And the differences between those sets of groups was statistically significant. Now, by mom group, which I think is sometimes more interesting, the adolescents, you can see just sort of the vast difference there between feeding at 6 months, exclusive formula feeding and exclusive breastfeeding at 6 months. So 69% of the adolescents were exclusively formula feeding at 6 months, whereas only 17.2% of the adult high education women were exclusively formula feeding. So in terms of WIC, we were interested in WIC because we see it as a marker of income level and, you know, sort of SES indicator of infant feeding behavior, just to see how those sort of interact. So of those respondents receiving WIC at 6 months, which was about 250, most of them were adolescents. And I apologize, the numbers aren't on this one, but of those receiving WIC at 6 months, 60.4%, which is the big pink one, were exclusively formula feeding. So most of the women on WIC were exclusively formula feeding, that is not breastfeeding. Very few of the women were exclusively breastfeeding. That small green sliver is 4.4%. So the other women were doing a combination. Now, in terms of social support, we had some interesting findings here. The social support index that we used, the minimum score was 3, and the maximum allowable score was 37. So you can see these are certainly not the lowest, but they're not the highest either. We broke it up into a mother group. So the adolescents, for instance, at the prenatal period, reported a mean social support level of 26.5. And we divided it this way in order to compare the groups in twos. So the adolescents and the adult low education mothers were significantly different from each other. And then on the third row, the adult low education and the adult high education were significantly different from each other. The adult high education group wasn't necessarily as highly different than the adolescents The adult low education and the adult high education were more different, which was interesting. You can see that going from the prenatal to the 6 months, the scores dropped. So at the prenatal, this was anticipated social support. So the adolescents anticipated a mean score of 26. At 6 months, they were only reporting about 24. For the adult low education, they also went down at the 6 months, and adult high education did as well. So, you know, at prenatal, adult high education, women were anticipating the most amount of social support. At the 6 month level, they were receiving the most amount of social support, but it was still less than what they anticipated. Interestingly, is that the adult low education group had the lowest both anticipated social support and the actual social support. Now, in terms of sleep variables, we include this because sleep is really an important part of infant feeding decisions, maternal sleep behaviors. And it's really been overlooked in the breastfeeding literature. Of respondents anticipating sleep deprivation at the prenatal assessment, so how will your sleep be impacted once you have this baby, most of the adolescents, not most of the adolescents. You can see how it's just sort of interestingly divided among adolescents and adult high education women anticipating the most amount of sleep deprivation, whereas the adult low education women did not anticipate quite as much. The infant sleep location, though, is quite interesting. So we divided this into separate room, same bed. That is, you're reporting that you have the baby in the same bed as you. So this was at the six-month assessment. In the same bed category, most were adolescents. So this is interesting because there's a line of research that shows that bed sharing and breastfeeding tend to kind of go together. That is, that breastfeeding can promote bed sharing, and that bed sharing sustains and promotes breastfeeding. So many women might actually use bed sharing, whether or not it's risky or protective in terms of general infant health, as a cost reduction strategy. So we were very interested in where the babies were sleeping. You can see that of the women who kept their babies in a separate room, most of those were adult high education moms, whereas, like I said, in the same bed, it was mostly adult moms. In terms of exclusive feeding, though, what we found was that of those exclusively formula feeding, most had their babies in the same bed with them. So this was this was pretty interesting and sort of provoking in different ways. Of those exclusively breastfeeding, while the differences were significant, you can see that it's not quite as drastic as those exclusively formula feeding. Part of the Parenting for the First Time study had a sleep lab, and we just wanted to include a couple of these pictures. These data are not used in this particular paper, but looking at how women were actually sleeping and feeding their infants, bed sharing versus not. So the multivariate findings. The odds of exclusively formula feeding is what we ended up looking at because we found that pretty analytically interesting. Being an adolescent mom tripled the odds of exclusively formula feeding as compared to adult high education mothers. So again, this is not using any breast milk whatsoever. Being an adult low education mom, though, increased the odds fivefold of exclusively formula feeding as compared to the adult high education mothers. And planning to exclusively formula feed in the prenatal period had one of the largest impacts we found on the likelihood of exclusively formula feeding. So the planning, the anticipation of how you will feed your infant seems to matter quite a bit. So that analytic importance we found of exclusively formula feeding as our outcome variable, most studies tend to examine factors related to exclusive breastfeeding. But due to the prospective and longitudinal nature of our study, we were really able to gauge intentions of either exclusively breastfeeding or exclusively formula feeding. And we had a lot more women who ended up exclusively formula feeding. So really opened an opportunity we found to see why this might be the case. Lastly, our implications. We find that public health measures should really focus on low-resource mothers, that is, as opposed to just adolescents, in terms of breastfeeding behaviors. Social supports, infant feeding, seem to be important for low-resource mothers and not just adolescents. We need to recognize that public health message exposure alone maybe is not enough to impact infant feeding strategies. That is, mothers cannot engage in behaviors that are more expensive, quote unquote, than their circumstances allow them to sustain. So intervention programming should provide various forms of supports to mothers at the societal as well as the individual level, in addition to educating them about the benefits of breastfeeding. And lastly, efforts to increase breastfeeding should include additional members of a mother's personal support network in the intervention programming. I'm happy to take questions. Thank you for listening. A good question. It was a variety. It was about an 18 question index, and it had both child care support questions as well as non-child care support questions. So anything from, do you have a car that you can use to transport your baby? Two things that had more impact on feeding, we would think. So it was sort of a wide range of support questions that we used to index and proxy a measure of social support. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, I'm supposed to repeat the question. So how did the racial breakdown play out in each of the samples? It was about the same, I would say. Would you say that,
Dr. Volpe? They were meant to be ethnically matched. Mm-hmm. For the sample that we have in 6 months, I'm not sure if it was, perfectly identical, but during the recording, they ethnically matched the three.
Yeah, so Dr. Volpe, my co-author, is in the audience, thankfully. they were ethnically matched, so each sample was planned to be ethnically matched in that way. Thank you. Go ahead. Sorry. Sorry.
In the states that was exclusive breakdown from getting provided nothing but personal.
Right. So that's an interesting question. 99% of, did the exclusive breastfeeding include solids, or was it actually just exclusive breastfeeding, nothing else besides breast milk? It's a good question because 99% of the mothers were incorporating solids by 6 months, so we had to just take that out. Did you want to add to that, Dr. Volpe?
Only just that exclusive breastfeeding could include some solids with a 6 month measure, but it didn't include any formula, ever using formula.
Right. Right. So the question is whether there was ever formula used. Yes, I'm sorry.
I actually have two questions. First of all, what was triggered by what you just said, which was, the exclusive breastfeeding, there was never an instance of formula feeding?
Correct. The question
because
is...
I'm curious because in a recent study that we did, we found that only one mother out of the 80 who we interviewed had never had an instance of formula feeding.
Mm-hmm.
But a much higher proportion were exclusively breastfeeding at the time of the interview. That they had a bottle, pressed a bottle at the hospital, mm-hmm. or the baby had jaundice, and the pediatrician, advisedly advised supplementation or whatever. But so that's why I was curious.
Right.
The other question I had was about the idea that we should direct our resources towards the sort of more at-risk mothers, and I was interested in what proportion of mothers you had who began exclusively breastfeeding or with intentions to exclusively breastfeeding who didn't make it to the 6 month mark, and what kinds of resources should be directed towards that group.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, first. Were they really not ever formula feeding? That answer is yes, as far as we know. The question was, how have you been feeding your infant in the first 6 months? So.
Because a lot of our moms would say, I've been exclusively breastfeeding, but when we did follow up questions, it turned out the babies definitely had a bottle of formula, but not necessarily because the mother had a choice.
Right. So this was their report at 6 months.
Okay.
Okay, last one. In terms of the most important sort of findings in terms of those who intended and then did not breastfeed, we did find social support to be impactful. We didn't cover it today, but trauma seems to be impactful as well, and as well as stress levels, et cetera. So we're going to flesh that out more at sort of that bigger level. But yes, there are moments of intervention such as the social support and the trauma that were interacting with intention versus actual reality. If that helps.
Thank you, Miranda.
That's all. Okay, thank you.